Life takes turns we create. Life takes turns we create. This is instant inspiration from Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. We received a lovely Christmas card from two gentlemen, and it has a teddy bear on the front, sleeping in a very posh bed, with his stocking held in his hand, waiting for Santa Claus to come and fill it up. And inside the printed statement is, "Wishing your dreams come true." And then down below, they write like this: "Life's twists and turns take us places we never planned to go, yet is a path we must take. The path that never changes is what we hold inside, the light that illumines our path. It is this light that we found in each other and will someday lovingly bring us back to you again. Love, John and George." So they say that life takes twists and turns that we had not planned, and yet we must take the path. And I would like to think that's quite beautiful and quite lovely, but life takes turns that we create. We create all the turns that we get. What is it that you're supposed to do with a bag of lemons somebody gives you?
Make lemon juice.
Make lemonade. Make lemonade and serve it and share it and have it be lovely. Now, this is great. Now, just a minute. Put that back, will you please? See, life takes turns, and we create them. Now, you're very kind. Someone just reached to the center of the table and took the pitcher of milk from the Lazy Susan, which spins around so that everyone can have it as they wish, and brought it to someone else's attention. And I want to tell everybody that we should not be the mother for everybody else. We should not be the brother's keeper. It's so easy for us to be our brother's keeper and then wonder why our brother isn't doing so well. This is happening quite often in life. We play the role of our brother's keeper, and then we wonder why they can't take care of themselves. When we were children, mother raised all five of us to learn how to cook, to scrub the floors, to wax and polish the furniture, to clean the carpets, to do everything, wash the windows, mow the lawn. And you say, well, every family does that. No, they don't. The girls do the inside stuff and the boys do the outside stuff, you know. The girls do the bedrooms and the boys do the basement, you know. And we had to do everything. We had to do bedroom, basement, living room, dining room, kitchen, pantry, everything. Even the pantry had to be scrubbed two or three times a week. A lot of traffic in there where we kept all the food. And I never thought it was terrible. And because I never thought it was terrible, I was invited by our neighbors to come over and clean their houses. But I was invited with pay. And so after working at home for my allowance, which covered a great many duties, to go to the neighbors and work for them and do their house was quite a privilege. But the biggest privilege was that our neighbor had lived in our house first. Our neighbor had had our home as their farm home. And then they built all the other houses around in the subdivision there, and theirs was exceedingly lovely and great. And she would have me come over and do her house and do the tile work and do everything. And she would see me do it, and I did a good job. She'd say, "Now you can do it better." here is how I do it. Here is how I require people to do it. And she would show me how to get the brush down into the grout. We didn't have that grout cleaner, and we didn't have all the fluids to do the jobs. We had to get in there with a brush and scouring powder and soap and clean those out. And they got dirty because they used their countertops and they used their floors very well, because she was always out there cooking stuff and doing beautiful things, Mrs. DeSwart. And just fantastic lady. And she had underneath her dining room and her dining room table this pillars, you know, with fluted things on them, legs that were all sort of, you know, lots of goodies in it, and you had to get down and polish every one of them. Because I don't know when she looked, but she checked them. She checked those legs under the table. In the middle of the table was one leg, you know, and then in each corner there's a leg. And she checked them all. And she'd say, "You didn't do that leg. You didn't do it." I could see the reflection off it. It was dull on one side and shiny on the other. You know, you missed it. And she taught me to be a perfectionist. She taught me to be very careful. Now, would you say life takes twists and turns, and there is nothing that we can do about it, that it we hadn't planned for that? Or would you say you get out of life exactly what you put into it? If you put enthusiasm into it, my brothers and sisters were not asked to go over and clean DeSwart's house. I was. Now, how do they know about it? Well, apparently my mother is a big blabbermouth, you know. And she is telling all the women in the neighborhood, "Hey, you know, I got two beautiful girls who are wonderful, but they sure don't clean the house like Herb does, you know. Herbie just is a wonder at it." And they say, "Well, send them over here." And I think she put them up to it. She said, "Well, you'd have to pay him, because he's not foolish, you know. If he's going to work for nothing, he's going to do that around the home, around the house. And if he's going to go out, then he's going to be paid for it." So I got paid. I got paid good. I earned more money than kids my age earned ever in that area. They were earning pennies, and I was earning 50-cent pieces. Wow. And I earned the pennies, too. I earned a dime for walking the dog. One of our neighbors had an Irish setter that they had to have walked every day. So I got a dime every day for walking the dog. I was sure enough there to take care of it. I didn't want somebody else to get my job. I took good care of it. But you see, life takes turns that we create. You're known by who you are. And if you are a careless person, it gets around. And nobody wants you to do things that you would be careless in doing. Nobody wants you to do something that's going to mess up their house or mess up their world. They want it done nicely. And so if you always give your best under every circumstance, you'll be asked to give more. And you'll be asked to give more in more beautiful ways. But the thing is, you'll be proud of yourself. And when you're proud of yourself, then life takes the turns that you create. And your pride is not because you're better than somebody else, but you do your best. As they say, you do your personal best. Now, do you always do your personal best wherever you are? I would like to say I always do it, but I know there's times when I don't. There are times when I'm not paying attention. There are times when I'm tired. There are times when I'm not giving my best, for good excuses, but there's no excuse for not giving your best at any time. No excuse ever for not giving your best. It's easy to drive, as I drove this past weekend, back and forth to San Francisco and Oakland and San Jose and Santa Cruz and Santa Margarita and San Luis Obispo and Atwater. I mean, that's a lot of miles I put on. That's a lot of miles. And in one day, yeah, I flew. In one day, I went all the way up to San Francisco and around to Santa Cruz. And but I stopped and did some counseling in between in Atwater for about 2.5 hours. And, you know, counseling is a busy work, too. It takes a lot of concentration and a lot of irritating the other person so that they will say the things that they don't want to say. And then you'll say, "Well, now you see, when you say things like that, you're putting yourself in jeopardy." And Well, I don't always say that. Well, if you ever say it, that's not good. And so I did my counseling and I did my driving, but I find that it's very easy for me to stay awake when I eat pumpkin seeds. And I just have these pumpkin seeds and I suck the salt. Well, the roof of my mouth gets very unusual, but I have these pumpkin seeds that I do. And when I stop eating the pumpkin seeds, when I don't eat them for maybe half an hour, then I get drowsy. It's probably
an addiction.
Huh? An addiction. It's probably a mental quirk rather than a physical quirk. But life is a mental quirk. All of life is a mental activity. The healing is a mental activity. Wholeness is a mental activity. Staying awake or falling asleep is a mental activity. And if all it takes for me to stay awake as I'm driving and drive safely, you know, because you can drift off, you know, and come up like that, and that's not good. That's not good when you're buzzing down the road 75, 80 miles an hour. The traffic is going 90, you know, and you're just trying to stay, you know, somewhat reasonable. And if you fall asleep for a second is a lot of distance. And you can do a lot of silly things. And so I find that the pumpkin seeds are a very helpful thing, plus something to do, you know. And no one else has, perhaps other people have done that too. I don't know. Maybe that's why they sell so many pumpkin seeds. Or what are the sunflower seeds? They sell a lot of sunflower seeds, more sunflower seeds than pumpkin. Hmm?
Chewing gum.
Well, chewing, I thought of that. I thought I ought to get a couple packs of chewing gum and see how that works on long trips like that. But when you drive, and we got up at 3 in the morning approximately, and then we had our swim and our walk and breakfast, and then after breakfast we had our talk, and then after our talk I drove out of here about 9 o'clock, and to be up there at 10 o'clock or at night at Faith's place in Santa Cruz and doing all those things in the process, it's
impossible.
It's quite demanding, but it's good. And I flew and it was wonderful. And the people flew with me. Everyone was doing the same thing. But it rained cats and dogs. It was coming down in gusts and thunderstorms, and the wind was going whoosh, whoosh. It was my little car close to the ground, you know, not being too affected by the wind. The big trucks were going leaning this way and leaning that way, with the wind be shifting back and forth. And I just drove along nicely, and life takes turns we create. So I just created myself as snuggling and huggling the ground. And that's what I did. I just zoomed right along. And it was wonderful. It really was wonderful. And wherever I wanted to be, I turned off. And I was going to see Glenn Haney, who had been my vice president in the Junior Chamber of Commerce when I was editor of the newspaper there. And he was vice president when I was in the Lions Club. And he was vice president with me when I was president of the Rotary Club and other clubs that I was with there. And I went to see him, and he had suffered a number of misfortunes, and I told him how his thinking had brought them to him, which he was not pleased to hear, and then I told him how to start getting his thinking on the right track. And he got his thinking on the right track and started to do it, but then I'd been with him 2.5 hours, and he was on his chemotherapy, and he was taking a lot out of him. So then I left. And I drove up to Faith's house. And when I got to Faith's house, I called her from the top of the mountain, and I said, I'm coming in. And she said, well, have a cup of coffee now and talk to people and make sure they tell you how to get here. And I said, I'm on the road, babe. I'm cruising. And just then I went down into a gully, and of course I was out of her range and lost her. But as I cruised down 17 from San Jose to Santa Cruz, the policemen were standing along the side of the road with their bullhorns, slow down, all of you, slow down, you know, trying to get people to slow down, because every now and then there'd be somebody who'd have an accident. There were no ambulances, nobody was hurt, but they messed up their cars, and the police had to get people to slow down because the rain was coming down so fierce you couldn't see more than 3 or 4 car lengths ahead. I mean, that's coming down. And it was wonderful, though. It was beautiful. It was washing the streets, and it was making everything beautiful and clear. And when I was at Faith's house, her house is on a bluff, you know, overlooking the river. But at the intersection where you turn into her place, there's a dip. And that dip filled up with water 3 feet deep. And different cars, not realizing this, drove down in there and didn't come out. And so I told Faith, I'm not going down there. I don't have my car sealed that well. And so we drove in her parking lot, and she got out, and it was good. But you see, life takes the turns that we create. I could have foolishly driven down into that water and blub, blub, blub my way out the other side. But I hold my nose, yes. But but we didn't do that. We had more intelligence than that. I noticed that right next to her house is the sheriff's jail, the jailhouse for the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department. And the deputies and so forth had all their cars parked there in the street. And most of them were about half underwater. And I thought to myself, my goodness, when you guys come out of work, you're going to be surprised. You'll probably have to take a cab home and wait for the water level to go down. But you see, life takes turns, and we do create them. Now, did those deputies know that that water would fill up there? Mm-hmm. It does every time it rains. There's not enough drain off there. And they parked there because they wanted to get closest as they could to their job. They didn't want to walk more than, you know, 100 feet. And so that means they're going to walk home because their car just wouldn't start. We saw several people pulling their cars out and opening the doors and letting the water out. it was quite an experience, quite an experience. But the little Miata that I was driving, I pulled in a parking space up the hill. And then when I pulled out, I just made one U-turn right in the middle of the street there, just perfect to go in a circle and get out of there without going down into the water or backing up even. But you see, life takes the turns that we create. Every activity that happens in life is what we create. Now, I always say to Faith, Faith, I'm going to visit you. I give her a little warning, you know. And she had about, maybe an hour and a half's warning. And she should have got her pencil and paper out, started writing down the things she wants. But she didn't do that. She was just worried about how I was going to make it through the storm. And if I hadn't told her, she would never have worried. I would have just gotten there and she said, you came in all the storm? What storm? But I gave her an opportunity to think ahead, to write down, because she did say she wanted a CD of Allegro for Strings. She wanted that. And I said, well, great, let's pick it up. So we drove into Santa Cruz, and as we drove into Santa Cruz, the wind was roaring back and roaring forth, and the trees were bending this way and bending that way. And then the rain would drop down, and a heavy dropping down, and it was really exciting. And then we parked at the back of the store that sells these CDs. And we walked from the parking lot to the store and in maybe about 100 feet, and zip, we were in. And then as we were going out, I said, now let's go out the back door. She says, no, we have to pay up here. I said, you didn't pay back there. No, we pay up here. And I said, if you pay up here, we're going to have to walk all the way around the outside of the store through the rain and, you know, get soaked. She says, this is where you have to pay. I said, okay. So we paid, and then we went out the front door, and we had to walk all the way around the store, and the rain was coming down, and the wind was blowing, and she was just soaked to the skin. And, of course, I was dry and warm and toasty, you know. But I was soaked too. And we got in the car, and we drove out. And I said, now see, there's the back door, just 100 feet away. And the front door, it's like 200 yards away. So we really had to make quite a little tour. But you see, life takes the turns that we create. If you listen to people, and you believe in people, and you follow what they say, life is pretty nice. But you see, this is her town. This is her world. And so she knew better what to do. Of course, she didn't know where the store was. I had to figure that out. But she knew better what to do. And you see, our pride makes life pretty tough for us sometimes. We think that life's twists and turns take us places we never planned to go and to paths that we must take. And that's a beautiful human statement. But we put the cause in motion to go that way. We put the cause in motion to have those experiences. We put the cause in motion by our own individual pride. If we didn't have so much pride, we could have everything. We could have everything. Interestingly, I was going to let John and George live in the Oasis for a short time while they were getting their new property. And they were so into smoking, and perhaps drinking too, I don't know, but smoking, they couldn't give up smoking for just the several weeks that it would take for them to get their new property set up. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting that they could have had that so beautifully for themselves and taken their time and not been rushed? But as it was, they were rushed, and in the rush, they lost their friend, and they lost their horses, and they lost everything else. Everything went because they didn't have the pride. Smoking is pride. Because I'm smoking, and I'm going to smoke, and nobody's going to tell me I can't smoke. You can tell yourself that. And I'm drinking, and I'm taking drugs, and nobody's going to tell me I can't take drugs. And you can tell yourself that. But the thing is, we have such a pride. We have such a pride that keeps us from having the highest and the best that we could have. Now, each one of us still has a lot of pride. Each one of us still has a lot of feeling that we're superior to other circumstances. That when people call us for treatment, we're going to heal them. Well, we are not. We are not. And they're going to heal themselves. And they're going to become aware that they're healing themselves because they're using the cause and they're putting it into effect and they're getting the result. Yes, it's the law of cause and effect. But they're putting that cause in motion. Now, life takes turns and we create. What turn are you going to create for yourself now in life? Are you going to say, I am now doing that which is my makes me the happiest and the most fun thing for me to do? You're going to say, I am surrounded by the pure white light of love. You're going to say that I do everything that makes me happy. Are you going to say that under all circumstances, in all places, wherever I may be, I am the boss? Hmm? It's not that you're superior to somebody else, but you're the boss of your world. You're the creator of your world. You're the one who sets the course for your world. Now, are you able to do that? I kind of think you can. And I kind of think you will. Because you know that life takes turns, and the turns are the ones that we create. We create every turn that life takes. So why not start putting them positively in motion for ourselves? So we can have every experience we want. My wife put the cause in motion that I would come up and visit her. She called 3-4 times. My birthday's coming up, and this is here, and that's there, and Christmas is coming up, and aren't you going to see me? Aren't you going to do this? And Mark didn't say anything. He just said, hi, Dad. Mm-hmm. And a little legal, he sent an email, you know, saying much of the same thing, but unfortunately he wasn't there. He was off somewhere else. He didn't know I was there. And I had a good time with him. I had a good time with them all because I was in charge. I called Faith and I said, I'm going to sleep at your place tonight, and tomorrow toward evening I'm going to drive down to Mark's, and then I'll be with Mark for the next day until noon, and then I'll leave at noon because Mark has an important meeting coming up on Monday with financiers who are investing in his business, and I didn't want to take time away from what he perhaps would like to polish up his office a little bit. I don't think he does. But that's his choice. That's his choice. But you must ask yourself, and I would ask yourself now, what would you do if God were going to come and visit you in your apartment, in your house, in your suite, in your room? If God were going to come and visit you in your room, and you thought of God as being an outside objective being, what would you do? Would you do business as usual, or would you get in and tidy up that place? Would you put everything in place? Would you be orderly? Would you make everything attractive and pretty? I think you would. Well, whenever we have guests in our world, life takes turns that we create. Whenever we have guests in our world, we want to straighten up our house a little bit, mentally and physically, inside and out. We want to straighten it up so that when God comes to visit us or guests come to visit us, they will find that we care about ourselves, and we care about our house, and we care about our world. Life takes turns that we create. What kind of turns are you creating in your life? Are you the boss? Or are you creating turns where you are not the boss because of your choice? It's all our decision. So, my dear beloved friends, have a wonderful time. If I say evening, then you'll know that this is night that I'm giving the talk in. But have a wonderful night and have beautiful dreams. And I surround you with my pure white light of love and see you taking the turns that lead you to happiness and success. I love you.